Hey friends, we'd like to apologize for delivering this show just a touch late this week as we had some outside problems and technical difficulties we had to sort through. I want to say thanks for your patience and your constant support, and enjoy the show.
Seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother...
Welcome, friends, to episode 8 of Color of Magic. I'm one of your hosts, Daquan Watson, as usual, riding shotgun as my buddy Brian. How you doing?
Hey, everybody. Week 8. Two months of this.
We've officially made it 2 months. We are official.
This is one of the longest relationships I've been in, you know, in my marriage. Before then, you know, before then, 8 weeks was a struggle, let me tell you.
I don't know if that's good or bad, or what that makes me. Well, maybe that says more about me than you. Maybe I like some of the punishment. I don't know.
That's what we're going to go with.
Oh, man. So, yeah, it's been really good. I mean, things are turning out great. We're still getting lots of positivity, so let's keep it up. You know, and actually, speaking of, we have two new patrons we have to recognize.
What?
Yeah, two new ones. So we have Marcel MTG, as they have their name in Patreon, because that's all I can go by. And we actually have another from Ray Traeger. And all right. Ray, if I'm not mistaken, came over from my stream, which we're going to talk about later over on Twitch.
Cross promotions. So, I love it.
Yeah, so thanks to you two both. That is going to help us out so much. We're actually now getting close to being in plus money, so we can pay a bill or two. So
nice.
We're not quite there, but we're getting there. So going into this week, we want to follow up on our segment we started last week and just ask, what did you learn this week? So for myself, I have a very interesting fact. This also comes from my stream, from one of my regulars, actually a subscriber, Thinden, I believe is his name, and from Australia. So this is how it's related, because I need to preface it with that. So when I lead in, you're not like, how is this related? No, this strictly comes from my magic stream. But we were talking about random stuff on the chat, and he mentions that I guess there's a crest for Australia that has an emu and a kangaroo. Not a surprise, because those animals are found there, you know. But he said specifically the reason the kangaroo is on there is because it only goes forward.
That's awesome.
I know. I thought, like, how cool is that, right? Like, because, I mean, roos are obviously, like, tough as nails. They're mean as hell. But
they'll fight you.
But the fact that they only go forward, I was like, that's such a cool piece of information to even, like, have. Like, that's like, deep, like, third-level thinking. You know, that's, like, big brain stuff to put that on there.
I'm waiting for some Australian person to become a self-help speaker, and that's their montage, is to be like the kangaroo because it only goes forward. I don't know how nobody's done that yet.
Why not? Why not? So, what about you, man? What'd you learn?
I learned, and I'm going to guess I'm not the only person that saw this week. Apparently, you know, if anybody's seen the new Harriet Tubman movie or planning to see it, while they were kicking around ideas and casting, apparently somebody really wanted to cast Julia Roberts as Harriet Tubman.
Yeah, I saw that.
Now, when obviously, you know, someone sane spoke up and said, wait, I don't know if y'all heard, but Harriet was black, I guess the response was, well, it's been so long ago, most people aren't going to know.
Wow. That's all I got. Just wow.
When my wife first told me that, I'm like, no, surely not. There's no way. Then I clicked on it. It was multiple reputable entertainment sites are reporting this. And I believe it because I also heard when they did, not Black Panther, but the actual movie about the Black Panther Party, they apparently, you know, they Hollywood was doing the same thing. Like, okay, we get the Panthers had to be black, but we need a star. Could like Kevin Costner or Keanu Reeves be somebody that was helping the Panthers out behind the scenes? No, because no such person existed.
Though, actually, it's funny you say that. There's actually a movie that Apple was supposed to be previewing this week that they pushed back for another 2 weeks, I think, that actually stars Samuel L. Jackson and another big name black actor. I don't know why I can't remember his name right now. but it's about them running a banking business. I want to say in like the 1920s or something. Oh, wow. But they had hired a white person to be the face of the company.
That makes a lot
of sense. So they could get rich or whatever. Yeah. So anyway, that's just random stuff that's out there. That's actually cool. And one thing I will say, too, on your thing with the whole Harry and Tubman situation, the thing that's bothered me about it is people seem to be hating on the actress that they were trying to choose when those words, as far as I could find, never came from her. So I'm like, why are you hating on Sandra Bullock or whatever? Like, she didn't say she wanted to play Harriet Tubman. Somebody else just threw her name into a conversation.
Yeah, or Julia Roberts, but yeah.
Yeah, Julia Roberts, sorry. I mean, but that'd be like, you know, somebody running around saying, well, I think Daquan would be perfect for, I don't know, a liaison to the Ku Klux Klan or something, yeah, you know, or whatever. It's bizarre. And I'd be like, I never said that crap. Like, you know, what are y'all doing? So anyway, be mad. Just be careful where people are directing the anger.
It's funny to hear, you know, what it could have been. Like, for example, I think Will Smith was supposed to be Neo, and I can't even imagine those movies with Will Smith.
Ooh, that would be weird. That'd be fun to talk about, though.
For me, Keanu Reeves is perfect for The Matrix. I can't envision anybody. But it absolutely would have been fun, man. Like a parallel universe. You know, Will is in The Matrix.
Yep. Well, he kind of got his moment with that new one with the...
No, he didn't. Unfortunately.
Well, I hadn't seen it. I'm just no saying he had his similar moment. So another thing we have going on, for those of you that may have been following us since last episode, is we actually have both given ourselves some challenges to stream for consecutive days. Brian has been a little more...
Insane.
We'll say ambitious.
No, insane.
Yeah, I was going to say, I call it crazy, but, you know, I don't want to diminish people's, like, health issues. So I will just say you are overly ambitious compared to me, but I'm doing 60 days. Brian's doing 100 days. So how's yours coming along for you?
I'll say the good thing about YouTube is, hey, I can stop, and if I hate it, I can refilm it again, which I've already had to do a couple of times. But it really is going well. The numbers are trending upward. And I mean, a couple of them, I would say, like, yeah, this is really, really proud of these. And some of them, like, okay, I went a little too far to the left or the right. And that's what happens when you do 100 of them. It's hard to, even if you think your favorite TV show, even your favorite TV show probably didn't do, you know, there's episodes where, like, what the hell? What happened here? Every show has those. Even the greatest shows of all time. So yeah, doing 100.
Yeah, I guess that's fair, because, like, even if it's consistently good and there's actors you like or whatever, you're going to have one or two that, like, because you have your super high quality favorite episodes, the others just aren't going to live up to them.
And some of those become, like, of course, you know, the whole Jump the Shark thing, I mean, came from Happy Days, one of the greatest sitcoms of all time, until that happened.
Yeah, that's fair. For me, you know, it's been interesting because I haven't ever... dedicated, because it wasn't, obviously it's not my main income stream, so I'm doing other things, but I've not actually got on for consecutive days and really put time into it. So tonight will be day 5 for me, I believe, since I started doing this. And yeah, it's also been equally positive for me. I'm seeing a lot of people coming and watching my stream over on Twitch, seeing the numbers go up. I'm getting a subscriber every couple days, it looks like. I'm getting 2 or 3 followers every day. I already have some regulars that have come all 4 days, which has been cool. You know, like I told you, I have some people from Australia because of the time. Like, okay, that's one of the things too. Let's kind of shift the focus for a little bit. I think one of the things we haven't really talked about is, I think we do this, right? And people have asked, how do you get into streaming? How do you get into podcasting? How do you build a crowd? How do you build an audience? And I've read up on a bunch of that stuff. I've watched a ton of the YouTube videos. And the things I'm learning are not things they've talked about. So for myself, one of the things, especially on Twitch, that you have trouble with is that people tell you want to be on during peak hours. You want to be on when all the viewers are on. But the reality is, in doing that, you're going to end up on the, like, 5th, 6th, 7th row. They have to scroll down to find you because you're going to have some number that's 5 or less of viewers. So you're going to be way down the page. But for me, I've started out doing my 60-day challenge late in the evening. So I've been on at 9 or 10 p.m. Pacific time and then staying on for like 2 hours. And that's helped me build up a lot of people because all I got to get to is 5 or 6 viewers. And then all of a sudden I'm showing up on the second and third row at that time of night. And I don't think they tell nobody. I haven't seen that information anywhere. So that would be my biggest tip. Like, if you're really trying to look at doing this seriously, dedicate to doing it for some number of days to build up consistency and just start out being on later. Now, after you get up to where you're doing 10 or 20 viewers at a time, then you can be on during prime time and you'll be right in the mix with several people and only be a couple rows down. Because like we were saying off the air, like you said somewhere, like if you get to 10 viewers, you're already in the upper percentage of people.
Which is crazy to think about. And it almost, you know, makes you nervous. But yeah, because you think about how many people start out at 0, get to 1 and 2, and it just decide it's not for them or they get frustrated. So even if you hit 10, you're going to be, I think, in the top 2% of people. And if you look around streams, you'll see. Look at how many people there are from, you know, 0 to 5, and then how few people there are from 10 and up by comparison.
Yeah, the other thing too is I don't think the goal should be focusing on revenue so hard to begin with. Because, I mean, even in this case, we had a Patreon member from our join from listening our podcast that they found out through my stream, right? So those things eventually come together. Like, you just have to build the people, build the consistency, engage your audience, you know, and find out what they wanted. Like, tonight, when we're done, I'm actually going to get on and draft. And I haven't drafted on Arena yet, like literally 0. But even the fact that they found that out, they're like, oh, well, that would be fun. Or I haven't watched anybody draft. But I'm like, okay, cool. There's a handful of people that are interested. I told them what time I'm going to get on. They're going to be there with bells on and we're going to draft and they're going to help me make picks and it's going to be fun. So, yeah. So you just find different ways to engage with people. So, yeah, just something I wanted to throw out there. For anybody who's aspiring to kind of respond to some of the messages I've gotten, like a lot of it is about engagement, but it's also understanding where you need to start and where the people are going to come from. Because when you have no following yet, you're just going to end up at the bottom of the pack and it's going to be even harder if you're just there competing when everybody else is on. The other is don't be afraid to leverage your social network. Like, you have friends who are interested, you have supporters. Like, just let them know, like, hey, even if it's like when I started out, I reached out to my social network and just said, hey, guys, I need some help. Can you come on? Just follow me and then just hang out for like 10 minutes or so just so I can get my numbers up to get to affiliate. And I had people who don't even like I explained to them how to sign up for a Twitch account. And exactly. They just came over and did it.
We assume you have friends. You know, I have a couple of Facebook groups for streamers and other forums and whatnot. And there are people in there. But, well, I don't have any friends. Okay, that's problem number one. That's the first thing you should fix. Then you ought to try to start being a streamer or, you know, a YouTuber or what have you.
Yeah, and that's a good point, right? Not to make fun of people that struggle, you know, making social connections, but maybe that's what you need to do. Go out. Go to your local store, meet some people, find out what they're doing online, join some Facebook groups, like get integrated to a group, a community, a culture, then extend out to it. Because if you have trouble with all that, it's going to be really hard to get yourself motivated to get on and talk to strangers and perform for strangers for days at a time.
Because
like I ain't even going to lie, I was kind of sick on Monday. And I still was looking at my thing like, I can't stop on like day 2 or 3 and just be like. So I went on and I called it day 3-ish. Yeah. And I literally put that if you go look at my VODs. And I was on for 23 minutes and tried to tough it out and left an apology. And I did day 3 again the following day to give him a complete day.
See, what were you doing? You were being like the kangaroo, always going forward. That's going to be some merch,
yeah,
man.
For
be
sure.
The kangaroo.
For sure. You know what? I'm going to ask Thinden if that would be offensive, because I don't know, or anybody else from Australia. But the first Color of Magic shirts we make for sale should have like a kangaroo
That's
on
That's right.
Them. And I think our listeners would get it. I think it would be a good tribute shirt. So if you're interested, shoot us a message. Give us a comment. Come by our Facebook page, shoot me something on Twitch or our Color of Magic podcast page on Twitch, and just let us know, would you want a Color of Magic shirt? And if so, would you be cool if it had a kangaroo on it? So we have other news in Magic this week, and it was big.
Oh, wait,
I don't even know. Can you hear me over the construction outside? I think they're taking down the whole building. This isn't just a hammer. I think they have like multiple jackhammers outside. They're destroying everything.
That's what that is. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
They did it. Like because remember we were asking last week like if they were gonna get rid of stuff. We knew for sure Oko was on the list, but we said if they didn't add Oko to the list, what other cards were going to go? Then we kind of got a weird combo. So, which is, I'm glad I didn't make a bet because I almost made a bet with somebody and then it would have been a weird like push because Oko ended up on the list plus two other cards in standard anyway. So Oko, done.
Shocking nobody.
Once upon a time. Yeah, that one wasn't a shocker. Once upon a time, done.
That one was more shocking. I heard rumblings, but I didn't hear anything that was like, yeah, they're totally going to do this. And I get it. It's making, you know, people able to put, you know, especially in modern, you can throw five colors in a deck and it's not even hard with Once Upon a Time.
And then Veil of Summer, done.
That one was just, you know, I play green, but I play it fairly and badly. So to lose both of those cards, like, geez, some of them weren't good.
Here's how I tried to describe Veil of Summer to somebody. And I'm glad because I saw somebody else post something similar. But if you think about it, a card like Cryptic Command, the two best or most commonly chosen modes on it, because you can choose four, are almost always counter something, draw a card. That costs four mana. I believe three of which are blue. Veil of Summer basically does that for one mana. It counters the thing you're worried about.
And for and green, you get a card. One mana is essentially zero mana. It's
yeah, I mean, it's crazy, right? So, and it's funny, but this is a good example of how fragile sometimes card economics can be in Magic. Like, if Veil of Summer costs two, it's so much less problematic. As crazy as that sounds, but the fact that it costs one is nuts good. So that being on the list makes sense. And they'd already gotten rid of it in Pioneer, so there was at least some inkling that that could happen. But yeah, Once Upon a Time, I think, is the real surprise, because I think a lot of people were kind of on the page that if it was going to be something else, it was probably going to be Nissa.
That's part of what we discussed. And plus, you know, Oko and Once Upon a Time are two cards that really, they are kind of the whole theme of the set. Once Upon a Time is the fairy tale card, you know. Oko is the planeswalker for the food mechanic. So it's like, yeah, it's two big hits for Eldraine. But they're necessary. I get it.
Yeah, I don't blame them at all for doing it. The only problem I have, which I'll cut Wizards some slack here, truthfully, because this is kind of a hard decision, right? You're going to take a card that people have spent money on, people, you know, are looking at as it's all your on all your promotional material. Something like you're saying, like Once Upon a Time kind of embodies the premise of the set, and you're willing to just say, cool, you can't play with those. Like, that's a real decision to make. And the interesting thing, though, is we were talking about this in the chat the other night, that Oko hasn't gone down crazy in price in some places because he's still played in other formats, which is not what I would have expected to happen. So maybe it's not that bad. Or maybe because they left it in a couple of formats, that was enough to keep the card value up. You could still trade it and sell it. Like, I don't really know.
Yeah, because I have no paper copies, but one of the first things I did was check the price, and I was also surprised. Really? It's just off of, you know, the other format, that's keeping, which I guess, yeah, if it's legal in your format, you gotta either have it or know how to deal with it.
The other thing that was cool, too, is, and I'm assuming it's if you already had some in your account, that when you logged on post-ban, so if you haven't yet, they gave you wild cards to replace them. I thought that was very cool because they didn't have to do that, but it was super cool that when you logged on, it just said, it showed you the pictures and said, hey, these cards are banned. And then the next time you click through, it just had a whole string of wild cards to replace the others.
I feel like they almost had to. It's just every digital game I can think of off the top of my head gives you something back when they ban something.
Oh, that's fair. It could have been anything, I guess. I mean, booster packs, blah, blah, whatever. But it's cool that they were just wild cards. Especially since where you get gated sometimes is rare wild cards. So getting those back for the Once Upon a Times was actually really nice.
Yeah. So what do I put in my food deck now, you know, to replace Oko? Yeah.
Well, it's funny you ask, because remember that tournament I told you I didn't get to play in because I was number like 300 and something and they only took 275?
Yeah.
Well, the tournament happened. It was $75,000 in prizes with, I believe, $10,000 going to first place, which actually went to Mike Segris. So congratulations to him. With a Golgari Adventures deck. And what's cool is, this is good for Mike because he has been a longtime pro player. He's in the MPL. And seeing some... Actually, let me just say that. The list of people who played this event was super deep. You had people that are like old Magic writers and whatnot that have played, like Zvi Malchowitz. Okay. You have to go back and read old articles from, hell, these most recent thing of relevance that people would know is probably from 10 years ago.
Wow.
You had people like Seth Manfield, who's, you know, one of the best players in the world, was playing. Obviously, Mike Segris, who won it. He's a fantastic player. Javier Dominguez, who's world champion, you know, mythic champion. You know, like, he was playing it. I think he finished 16th. So, I mean, like, it was all over the place. I mean, there was all types of pro players. The list had world champions. It had tons of streamers. I mean, it was just a crazy group of people. So you had all types of skill levels, all types of interest, play styles. It was very, very cool.
Legends coming back.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I would love to see.
It's like that scene in The Running Man when Jesse Ventura unretires to join the competition.
It sort of felt like that when you're looking down the list and just saw the people that are playing. It was super awesome. So I'm glad it went over well. I think the format could use a little bit of restructuring. I mean, the number of people getting in, that's fine. I would like to see in the future if they did something like a certain percentage for, say, pro players, a certain percentage for maybe streamers, or maybe even so many for like affiliates and so many for partners or something. And to balance that and give more people shots at getting in, or even you have to have so many followers or so many subscribers or whatever. It's just something, I think, to just set the bar differently would be cool, other than just like who happens to be online at that time to sign up, because that was a little rough.
Yeah. You know what else they could do? And I hate to recommend anything that comes from Major League Baseball because a lot of times they're very backward. But have some play-in matches, you know. Have something to say, hey,
that would be good.
Kind of like a pre-tourney. We're like, okay, these people are on the bubble. So let's say we're going to have, hey, maybe this streamer goes against, you know, this pro player that nobody's seen in 10 years. How much fun would that be?
Though, you know, I mean, seriously, if anybody from Twitch is listening, like that is a great idea. Maybe you do a tournament that's like up to 200 affiliates or something can play, and the top 20 or something get to play the big tournament the next week, right? Like that would be one way. Like I'd be down with that.
And it gets you more content. So, hey, why would they not?
That's exactly it, right? Like you get all that ad revenue, you get all the people coming and watching. Like, and the other thing that was cool about this event is because it was the day after the bans happened. So nobody really knew what to expect. I think people were speculating and just taking shots at what they thought were going to be the next big deck or something. What else in here that looked fun? There was a Jund Sacrifice deck that played what you expect they would. The Witch's Oven, the Cat, Goose to make food, Mayhem Devils to deal extra damage, Massacre Girls to wipe the board, Trail of Crumbs, which is starting to get a lot of play. Whenever you sacrifice food, you can pay one, you look at the top two cards, and you reveal a permanent, put it in your hand, put the other on the bottom.
That's so what's going on my deck. I don't have any of those, and that's what will replace my Okos, is Trail of Crumbs. There you go. Question solved.
Yeah, you're going to start seeing a lot of those. I think the interesting thing is, with those cards being banned, I think it changes up what the decks are able to do, because your creatures, or permanents, I would say, not even creatures, because, you know, Oko was able to turn artifacts into Elks too. There are cards that just weren't able to be played before that are allowing other things to happen. Like, a good example is like Izzet Phoenix, right? Ended up finishing well in this tournament. I don't know if Izzet Phoenix is going to be a quality deck going forward or not. But even a card like Crackling Drake does almost nothing in the face of an Oko. Like, you pay 4 mana, draw a card, and then you just have this 3/3 lump. That keeps you from playing other cards, because you can't play defense with something like Crackling Drake. Or you can't set up a long turn to get a bunch of stuff in the yard to play a really big Crackling Drake and then attack. Like, so the entire strategy of what some decks are doing is definitely opened up to what people are willing to play. So it'd be really interesting.
You looked everywhere and all you saw was Elk. I said, you looked everywhere in Standard and all you saw was Elks, as far as the eye can see. I've been trying to be the devil's advocate for Oko, because, hey, it's, you know, we debate. Hey, somebody's got to, you know, I guess somebody's got to try to argue. But yeah, it was time for him to go. And I'm a fan, but, you know, he did too much.
I hear you. Another interesting thing, too, is we ended up, there was, I believe, one mono red and one mono white deck, and actually even a mono blue deck that got played. And they were all kind of interesting, because the red deck mostly looked like you expect it would look like. But the white deck was very cool. It had, well, I said it's interesting. I don't know if I'd say cool, because it's playing a bunch of just like generally bad creatures, like Loyal Pegasus. It's a 2/1 flyer that can't attack or block alone. Like, okay, I guess. You know, and it's really living on cards like Tithe Taker, the Venerated Luxodon. It's using Heraldic Banner to give all your creatures +1. And get extra mana.
It's never attacking alone.
Oh, yeah. So it's kind of interesting, just the variety of decks that have been opened up now because of this. I think that's just really cool. Yeah, I have no idea where we're going to end up in the next few weeks, but I like where we're at now.
Definitely.
And it's made it more fun to stream, let me tell you. Like, people have come and watched, and we're playing just a bunch of quirky decks, trying some new things, and people are having a good time with it. So thank you, Wizards, for the bannings. I'm sure they were hard decisions. I'm sure they're not decisions anybody likes. I'm sure if you're an R&D, it feels bad because you put work in on a thing that ended up not being what you wanted it to. But this is definitely where we needed to be. And it's going to make watching the Mythic Championship coming up in 2 weeks so much better.
So true. You know, since we dove into that a little bit, you know, how, because, you know, that's the question that people inevitably ask, and since, you know, you get to some extent speak for Wizards, how does something like Oko happen?
I don't want to completely speak out of turn, because there is a lot that goes on in R&D, but if you read through just like the explanations they put out publicly and some of the previous articles and things they've written about, you know, other errors that have happened, sometimes it's just a sheer volume thing. You know, I mean, we're, even if R&D, let's say there were 100 people that were testing these cards and putting all the text on them and trying to figure out the casting costs and whatnot, it's very possible that whatever were to happen within R&D doesn't ever happen out in the real world for whatever reason. And conversely, it's possible they come up with something that they don't see, and you put it out to millions of players, and the hive mind finds something. You know, and okay, well, you didn't balance cards for that particular scenario, so that's a problem. In the case of Oko, I believe in the most recent article they put out, there was just, it was a matter of like changing some things to deal with certain situations. Then there were some late edits that happened And then they change a couple things because of another card. And then before you know it, two or three things have changed on a card and it didn't get a whole additional round of testing and it gets proofed and out the door. And here we are.
Okay.
That's happened with other cards in the past too, where they said, well, we wanted to balance a thing or we didn't want this to be too weak. So they added a word or reduced a mana or whatever. And sometimes it's fine, you know, but I think it's more concerning as a player when it happens to something that costs less than four, I would say. Yeah. There's some things even at four that could be rough, but for sure, less than four is where you're going to really feel the crunch. Because at that point, it starts to be able to fit into a lot of different decks. It starts to be very easy to cast. So if it is out of proportion, you're going to see it more and it's going to have the effect on a, have an effect on the game more often. And I think that's the real concern there.
Okay. And like we talk about every week, pretty much, you know, back when we were first starting to play Magic, okay, if something came out that was ridiculous, you had to read a magazine to hear about it.
Well, yeah. I think that's the biggest thing, right? And when I was having this conversation with somebody not long ago that somebody who starts playing Magic today, within 2 to 3 years, will easily be as good as I was in my first 5 to 7 years. Just because the amount of information, actually probably would only take them a year if they really dedicated themselves, because just the amount of information that's available, you can get on and play Magic Online or Arena any time of day, find an opponent whenever you want. If you have a deck idea, you can hop on and test it for an hour. Like, cards are accessible everywhere. Because that was a silly thing, too. Like, you may not even have access to all the cards you wanted initially. You know, like, none of the hurdles are there that used to be there. So, if, in this case, there's a thing that's wrong with a card, it can be discovered, tested, exploited, really by a group of people within, like, 72 hours. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Both exciting and frightening.
Yeah. I mean, but you see, like I said before, you see how fast the metagame changes. Like, we just saw the Stritch Rivals tournament. I guarantee you, if I get on these next couple of days and I'm streaming, I'm probably going to see several of those decks on there. Within a 6 or 7 day window, those decks are going to look significantly different, either in sideboard cards or cards that have been added or whatever, because of the way the metagame has shifted. Which, by the way, I'm going to give you my one tip that I've noticed. If you are playing black or can in some way support it, Leylight on the Void is a great sideboard card to have right now, because the food decks, sacrifice decks are hard to deal with, but like getting something like that that they can't remove, that just keeps them from bouncing the cat back and forth and just get stuff out of the graveyard. Ah, chef's kiss. It's awesome.
You heard it, folks, right here. From the man that told you about Embercleave, when nobody else was telling you about Embercleave.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's going to be like a $15, $20 card. I'm just saying, if you need a sideboard card and that matchup's tough, at least consider it. So, coming back to where we were at the top of the show, being here 2 months, we kind of wanted to come back and revisit kind of our mission and stuff on Dinner Table Talk, to kind of just, I guess, put things in perspective after really getting started and seeing what the response is. Because we mentioned before, like, we had a pretty considerable conversation about, is this something the community even wants? And once we decided that was a yes, it was, okay, how badly we think the community needs it. The responses were positive enough that we figured, okay, there's a need. And then it was, okay, well, let's do it and see how everybody reacts. So just, you know, hold on to your butts. We kind of just went for it.
That's the best thing to do, though. You know, we talked there a little bit earlier about, you know, how to start streaming or YouTubing. The one piece of advice I got from everybody is to get started.
Yeah, you sometimes just have to put yourself out there. I mean, there's no other way to find out sometimes. So I don't want to sound like this is a, like, oh, we're superheroes or, you know, whatever, anything like that. But
I do. I totally want to be secret. No, no.
But I just want to really put in perspective for people that like went out and spent real money, you know, getting a URL, paying for the services, the web hosting, you know, all this stuff, with no idea of if people were really going to react positively to this, or if this is something in 2 months we're just going to be done with, right? Like, it could have been a case where we're getting so much hate mail or whatever that it's just easier to walk away from. Fortunately, it's not. And we're still here.
You like us. You really like us. And we like you.
But I will say this, you know, as much as there's positivity, I reached out last week to ask people, hey, do you know any POCs in the magic space that have something coming up, need to be highlighted, have any projects they want to talk about, shoot them our way so I can talk to them and get them on the show. And thanks to our communities, everybody was really positive, responded. I still have several people I'm needing to reach out to, so hopefully we'll have some lined up for the next couple of weeks. But even in that, one of the first responses I got was from a gentleman I do not know. I'd have to even go look up his Twitter handle. But he had gone back to years ago, like 3 years ago, and pulled up a post of mine that was a magic card that was mocked up to make fun of the Bundy standoff in Portland in 2016. And the card, I think, had the title of Y'all Qaeda on it, which I thought was cute and funny, which is why I shared it. Also, let's be real. We talked about it. Like, ain't no way that the two of us would have went and done that and walked away from that with a bunch of agents out there with guns for whatever it was, like a week. You know, like,
we'd have been on Discovery ID as a cautionary tale.
Yeah, exactly. Ain't happening. But anyway, that whole situation went down. We made the card. We posted it. Whatever. I didn't make the card. I shared the card. Somebody else made it. But his response, this person's response to my post, was to go dig through my history and find what I guess they felt was the most, I don't know, discriminatory, anti-white thing they could find. Missing the entire point of the card. It has nothing to do with actual white people as much as it is the absurdity of the situation. Yeah. That's even allowed. When they're there having a standoff for a person that was ultimately found guilty of 16 federal offenses, by the way. So the whole thing is just absurd.
And black people say y'all too, y'all.
Oh, yeah. Black people from the country, we do say y'all. But going through this person's history on their Twitter account, they were what you would expect, a supporter of all the wrong things. They were upset at a bunch of the wrong things. They were sharing and retweeting stuff from people you would not find to be very good people. So ultimately, I just blocked them just to make it easy. I didn't want my discussion to get derailed before other people saw it. But the point is, these people still exist. And this is why we're doing what we're doing. And you know what? Really, like, I like my desserts, but this is not a pie. Like, this isn't because we're trying to help people get more, you get less. The idea is to make everybody equal on the same level. Like, give them an opportunity to do the same things you're doing, to get the same money or the same followers or the same appreciation for the work and the effort they're putting in that you're getting. We're not saying you need to get any less. I'm not saying I'm not looking for white guests because I want them pushed down. I'm just trying to give other people an opportunity. And for the record, I do have a white guest lined up that will be on the show, I think, in 2 or 3 weeks. So
wait, we didn't discuss this. Wait.
Actually, we did. We did.
We absolutely did. We're just having some fun.
But it's a very specific reason. I think it will be a great conversation when we get to it. But the point being that we are making progress on what we wanted to do. I've gone and followed up with a couple of people we've had on the show, and they've gotten some extra viewers and some extra followers. I've been over to Nessa's stream and she's doing well. And she sent people back to our podcast. So that's been awesome. So we've been able to do some shared networking. You know, there's more opportunities available to us and to our guests for doing this. And it doesn't mean the dudes over at like Arena Decklist should have any fewer followers, that the, I don't know, the Bash Bros podcast should have any fewer listeners. Like, no, those are entertaining shows. And the Arena Decklist guys are doing great work and they support tons of good causes. So in no way at all am I saying let's not support them either. I'm just saying let's support everybody equally.
It's like we talked about before we did this. We wanted to do the kind of show that we didn't have access to when we were growing up and learning to play this game and learning to play, you know, D&D and a million other nerdy hobbies that we have. We wanted to, you know, highlight the people that are out there that we didn't know about, you know, when we started, because they weren't in our little small towns.
Yeah, they just didn't exist. I mean, we've talked about it on the show where we didn't even have people in our own families or social networks that were into some of the stuff we were into. So giving somebody an opportunity, like when Nessa was on, like even listening to her talk about, it was the first time when they did Ixalan that she could see somebody like her with the history of the country and the land she comes from or whatever, like represented in a game. Like that's a huge moment for somebody. Exactly. Like we've gotten messages from people through Patreon and through Twitter, or whatever, to say, man, it's just awesome that somebody is doing this on this show, that somebody is caring about this, or that somebody is talking about this stuff. Because some of them, honestly, I've had somebody even say, like, it's cool somebody saying it because I don't know if I would be able to. And I get it. Like, we had that conversation of just like, all right, let's try this and see what the hell happens. And we're just prepared. Like, we effectively had a battle plan and strategy in case things went sideways. Like, I don't know any of my, and not to single anyone out, so I'm not gonna name names, but I've had conversations with some of my white friends that do social media stuff or whatever, and they have never once mentioned that being a concern when you're putting out a show.
It's unbelievable. But yeah, that is the kind of stuff we had to talk about, and we're seeing, you know, it's not all positive, and we knew that beforehand, because we were dealing with issues that a lot of people are not necessarily talking about in the Magic community.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I will add to this is that other than just us having these conversations on here and giving people exposure, I've actually had a couple of people open dialogue about a few things because of our show. And they said, oh man, I never realized this was a problem, or I hadn't really thought about this way. Or, you know, even the conversation where we were talking about, you know, things that are ingrained in us as part of the Black culture growing up that keep you from doing certain things. I had somebody come up at work and was just like, oh man, I heard your show. And that was the thing I hadn't even remotely knew about. Like, none of my Black friends really said anything about it or anything. And I was like, yeah, it's one of the things you don't think about, but it's there. So even being able to open those dialogues for things that aren't even 100% Magic related, I think create opportunities to make better products and make better experiences, because more of people's lived experiences are public and are shared. So if we can contribute to that, great. I want to do more
of it. That's the plan. And people say, I'm sure people say, well, okay, you know, it's a card game. These are, you know, fictional characters. But really, until if you've grown up in a world where you largely didn't see yourself represented as a superhero or as a wizard or, you know, somebody that has all this power, you don't necessarily understand.
Yeah, and, you know, think about it this way, right? Ultimately, if you enjoy a product, in this case, Magic, and you want Magic to be around for another 25 years, maybe even 50 years or longer, the best way for that to happen is if the maximum number of people on planet Earth are interested in this thing. The way you do that is to make products, characters, artwork, I don't know, coming soon, you know, Netflix shows, you know, whatever, that speak to as many people as possible. Give them a reason to relate. Give them backgrounds and stories that they care about. And that's not saying that there will never be anything that white people care about. It's still probably going to be the majority of the products. All we're saying is occasionally you have a world like Ixalan where something like this can happen. You have a character like Vivian or Kaya where somebody goes, man, I dig that that's like an actual natural black woman with black hair and everything. Like, cool. And not only that, like when you talk to people who are doing cosplay stuff and they have somebody, they go, man, I can do that cosplay. I look like that person. I have that skin tone. I have that hair. You know, I'm the right height, you know, whatever it is. It's important to people. And the cosplay community, they spend a ton of time and a ton of money, and they are going to be some of your most dedicated fans. So giving them more reason to come out is great.
And they're going to bring in people to your game because people come to, like, hey, I don't know who you are, but you look cool. You know, tell me what this is from. You know, it's free marketing for Wizards.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, even talking about, like, when we had Greg on the show, and he was talking about how his dad came to an event who doesn't play Magic at all, but he saw the large Teferi poster and was like, man, that's cool. And he went over and took a picture with the poster. Like, for somebody who doesn't even play the game, it stood out as that's a thing. Like, we don't normally get that in this space. So, like, that alone tells you something. And to be fair, I hate Teferi, but I appreciate what you're doing. I mean, just keeping it real for a second, you know.
Now I gotta know, why do you hate? Do you mean like you hate the card? You hate the character? What do you?
I hate everything Teferi cards do. I think that's okay. The problem.
Okay.
But again, I think seriously, the overarching point of what we're doing is not to isolate any particular class or group or whatever. It's the exact opposite. It's to build everybody up. So the community at large is diverse, is interesting, is full of the most creative, smart people. That these people have amazing ideas, an amazing skill, an amazing talent, are able to share it and get in front of people just as well as the people who don't know how to get themselves. Like, you have these other people, and man, we were talking about this earlier. Like, when I was looking to start streaming, before I got into like doing the podcast and everything else, I was just researching. Found a guy 3 nights in a row. He was on Twitch, literally not even saying anything. He was on there smoking a cigarette and playing Magic badly. And the dude had like 200 or 300 viewers. And yes, it was a white dude. So that made it a little more frustrating. But like, it was just like, why? How can this dude who does not, and I tried to look him up, like, the dude, he's just a guy. But like, I got on being more interesting, I thought, and like struggled to get even 10 people sometimes. Now, probably not related, and it's maybe not even be a racial thing, but it's just a fact of the matter that there's weird opportunities where some people just get more viewers or whatever, have the right timing. I don't know, maybe he got a big raid once or twice and some people went and followed him after that. Who knows? But if we can do our part to just help raise other people up, I'm in. Like, if you're going to hate us for trying to give everybody a leg up and equal the playing field for as many people as possible, no, you're just going to have to hate us.
And if you really, you know, as we said, it's not a pie. So if you don't want people to get exposure, that doesn't take away from you. You have to ask yourself why you hate those people getting exposure so much.
This is kind of the same thing when I was in retail. And you know, a good example is there was these two stores in the Dallas area. And they were literally down the same street. I think they were about a mile and a half apart, maybe two. And one of the owners would see the other, like store A would post something about, we're doing this tournament on Wednesday or whatever. Then store B would post up, well, we're doing a similar tournament and we're doing better prizes or whatever. And I had to sit and talk with them and explain to them, this isn't about taking something away from the other store. That's not going to make you better. The reality is you should be working with them. So the players that like playing whatever you're doing that day get the maximum opportunity to do that all week long. So they're constantly engaging and more people are there and the communities are building up instead of like spreading them out and making them choose and making each group smaller. Like, that's the exact opposite of what you should be wanting to do. We're all in this boat together. So we want the most creative people being involved, doing the most work. Because the more people that are doing awesome things, the more people we're going to get interested in the game, the more big events we're going to get, the bigger prize money we can have, the more sponsors that come into things.
The more guests we can have.
Yeah, but we need everybody working together because this is not a pie. Message. But anyway, I feel like I ranted now. That wasn't the intent of this.
It's the things we got to get off our chest.
Yeah, that definitely was not the point. I mean, basically what it is like we do appreciate everybody, you know, and I definitely want to put that out there. Like, this was, I mean, it's still a labor of love, really. I mean, we're not making anything doing it, at least not yet. And it's been great to see the positive feedback we've gotten from the community. It's been great to see the extra support our guests have gotten since being on the show. Because let's be real, like, we, by all standards, we're not a huge show. I mean, we're doing something like, I don't know, 12 to 1400 downloads an episode or something right now. So we're getting there. We're not small, but we're not big. But even that little bit has gone a ways to help out these people, which says so much, because I can only imagine, hopefully when we're doing episode 80, you know, and we have triple or quadruple the downloads or listeners, what we can do to help people.
You're scaring the guy who has routinely performed for audiences of 12 to 15, like 1100 people listen to what I was talking about.
Hey dude, I'm telling you, but like, if we're going to do it, we got to go all in and do it. You know, I'm not a fan of doing stuff halfway. You know, I like, if we're going to take on something like this, that's got larger implications, especially beyond ourselves, then I want to at least give it the best opportunity to work.
My brother.
Yeah. But on that note, I think this is where we can wrap up the show. We'll leave everybody with the good feels after the rant. It's like, basically, thank you all for coming and listening to us. Brian, why don't you tell everybody how they can find you?
Did we just do good cop, bad cop? Is that what it was?
I think there was a little bit of that. It wasn't intentional.
But yes, I am DL Caesar on YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter.
I am Power Dragon, PowerDragn, on most major social media services. You can find me there. You can also come watch me on Twitch for the next, this will be day 5 in the sequence, so the next 55 days and counting.
What have I talked you into?
So far, so good. We'll see how it goes. But for now, we're going to just say thanks and check out. So whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.